This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Typically, when we speak of rheumatism, we imagine an older patient. But children also can be affected. Pediatric rheumatology encompasses diseases that are due to a disordered immune system that attacks the body of children and adolescents aged 16 and below. Children with this condition generally present with long-standing joint pain of weeks to months and sometimes fever and rashes. Consultant pediatric rheumatologist and pediatrician Dr. Cham Wing Tang of Sunway Medical Center shares more. Dr. Cham, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Rheumatism is often associated with older people. What are pediatric rheumatic diseases and how common are they?
Well, in Malaysia, there is a lot of, quite a low awareness about rheumatic diseases in children. As the general public almost always equates rheumatic diseases to the elderly, but actually it's not always the case. As you know, pediatric rheumatic diseases encompasses diseases that are due to a disordered immune system, whereby the antibodies in our body attack the own body itself. So this is what we call in medical terms an autoimmune disease. So, as you mentioned, we treat children between the ages of from birth till the age of 16. So, globally, actually, in America alone, there are estimated about 30 million Americans who suffer from autoimmune diseases. So, that means 1 in 10 Americans have some form of autoimmune disease. So, likewise, actually, it's not that uncommon in Malaysia, but we actually see almost a new case of a rheumatic disease a day. And this makes it quite common, actually.
Aside from the fact that people think, oh, rheumatism must mean age, what other misconceptions are associated with pediatric rheumatic diseases?
I think the greatest misconception is that adults think that children do not suffer from rheumatic diseases, such as joint pains, and sometimes the parents actually brushes off their children's complaints as due to a fall or excessive playfulness. So some children can present with excessive tiredness too, and sometimes may refuse to go to school. Some parents may think that the children have problems or issues in school, and when their studies are affected, the parents will get very concerned, and actually they bring them to see a doctor to find out why is the child so tired all the time and refuse to walk and refuse to play. And because sometimes there's a delay, they go from one GP to another GP, so these children can actually suffer many consequences. And one very common condition is called childhood arthritis.
Okay, so most of us, I think, have a rough idea what arthritis is. Mm. What is childhood arthritis? Is it similar to arthritis in adults?
Okay, so childhood arthritis in the medical term called juvenile idiopathic arthritis, or I just call it juvenile arthritis, can affect children. And the difference between an adult arthritis and in children arthritis, adult arthritis usually is a symmetrical pain. So they have a symmetrical joint involvement. Whereas in childhood arthritis, it can vary from any joint anywhere. And childhood arthritis, it actually is quite common. About 1 in 1,000 children have this. So that means in a school of, let's say, 5,000 children, at least 5 of these children will have this condition in that same school. So basically, what happens is the joints are attacked by antibodies and the white cells, and this causes inflammation within a joint tissue called the synovium. And when the inflammation is uncontrolled, it can cause damage to all these important structures within the joint itself. And this can cause a lot of considerable pain and impair the child's function.
We're talking about childhood arthritis today. Later on, we'll be talking about SLE. But if you've got any questions about your child's health in general, as a whole, we do have a pediatrician in the studio today. So now's your chance. Give us a call. That number is 0377109000. You can also text us at 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Does childhood arthritis present in the same way as adult arthritis? What are the symptoms?
For instance, in the adult arthritis, most of our children generally complain of pain. So if they have a lot of pain, some of the children just regress in their developmental milestones. So for instance, if you have an 18-month-old child, and generally by 18 months, you can actually walk. But these children will regress. That means they've been walking all this while. then suddenly you find that the child starts to stop walking and the child cries in pain most of the time. So this can be due to arthritis. So this is one thing that needs to be considered. So the other thing about adult arthritis is usually there are some antibodies that are positive. But in children, most of the time, they are not there. So sometimes can make it quite difficult to detect. Some of these children with arthritis can have long-standing joint pain and swelling for weeks to months. Usually for juvenile arthritis, we diagnose them if the pain lasts for more than 6 weeks. So, and the peculiar thing is the pain tends to be worse in the mornings and seems to improve with movements, such as walking, if it affects the legs.
How do you diagnose the condition once a child is brought to you with these symptoms?
So generally, we will need to get a good history, and also we really have to examine these children. Sometimes it's quite difficult to examine a child who is actually in pain because they can be actually quite fretful. So if there are signs of swelling in the joints, and we can actually perform an ultrasound immediately there and there in some way to check for any evidence of inflammation within the joint itself. If there are suspicions of inflammation, then we can do blood tests, and this can be performed to confirm the condition. So the blood tests that will be performed are usually to look for inflammation. So we will also screen for other conditions that can lead to joint pain in children, such as infections too. So if the initial blood tests are not helpful, we can actually perform more advanced tests, such as MRI, to diagnose these conditions in those very young children.
You mentioned joint pain in children, but children, of course, they fall down a lot, they play, they get bruises. How can parents tell apart play-related pain from arthritic joint pain? I mean, if yesterday your son was running around and very active and today he's just like, oh, my legs hurt, it could just be because the other boys were kicking him.
Yes, you're right, Lynn. So at first, it can be actually quite difficult to diagnose, especially if it's after a recent trauma or fall. So I think the most important thing is that the pain persists a little bit longer than what will you attribute to a fall or trauma. So if the pain lasts for more than 6 weeks or even 2 months, something is not right because you don't expect such pain to last so long. Even fractures heal usually in 6 weeks. But why would this joint pain last longer than 6 weeks? So it's very important to know is the pain is very unusual. The pain is worse in the mornings. You expect children with pain, if they play a lot, the pain is after activities. But in this case, the pain is due to in the morning. So it's before activities have been started. And the older children sometimes can report stiffness in the joints. So the parents can say, oh look here, he's walking like a robot, because they're walking very stiffly. It's very stiff for them. So the parents can sometimes tell the difference too. Joints that are very superficial, like the knees, they can appear very red, swollen, or sometimes they feel warm to touch. So these are all the hallmarks of inflammation. So In some very peculiar cases, the child can have rash with fever together with joint pains. So this can help us to diagnose the condition.
The body and health of a child is very different from the body and health of an adult. I mean, the way they recover from injury is different. The fact that they're still growing also changes things. As a pediatric rheumatologist, what is the difference between what you do and a regular rheumatologist, I suppose?
Okay. I think the most important thing is when we actually deal with children arthritis, is the approach. Adults, they can come and tell you, look here, I've got pain in my fingers or pain in my knees. You know, what could it be? It could be osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis. So children don't come and say to you. They will just say, I'm in pain, I can't go to school. Most recently, I just had a child who was referred to me and has not gone to school for the last 5 months because he couldn't go to school because he's in a lot of pain in all his joints. So sometimes the approach is a bit different because they have schooling. So they have teachers. Parents need to understand about their condition. So we need to sit down and talk to them and tell the parents. Counseling is actually very important. It's very different from adults. Adults, they can make their own decisions. Children, they're still very young. We are like their child protectors. So we need to sit down and talk to the parents, talk to the patients, sometimes even talk to the patients if they're old enough, and talk about the treatment options and everything.
Now that we've come to that, what are the treatment options for childhood arthritis?
So actually it depends on the number of joints that are affected. If there are few joints, like 1, 2, or 3 joints are affected, the best method and the safest method is to do targeted joint injections. So we target steroid injections. It's the quickest and the safest because the medication just goes to the area that is affected. But some children have more joints. And when they have more joints, you need to give medications. And these medications are generally to regulate the immune system. So the treatment of autoimmune conditions like this are actually quite complex and requires close monitoring and maintaining regular follow-up with us. So there is unfortunately no magic drug till now, and they will have to take these medications for long term. So we have to balance up suppressing the immune system and at the same time allowing the immune function to be able to fight infections. So this is a fine balancing act, just like a balancing scale. So there are many medications now to treat childhood arthritis, such as steroids and what we call disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. So this all can actually help to control the condition. There are also newer generation medications such as biologics, and these are actually small molecules that can help to control the immune system. So, however, all these medications will not be helpful if there's no concerted effort on the part of the parents, children, and us doctors. The parents have to be in tune with medications. They can't go around and say, oh, today I'm not taking the medications, tomorrow I'm going to take some medications. They have to be in tune that this medication needs to be taken long-term. And whenever they have an issue in taking the medications, either the child or the parents have problems, then they need to let us know so we can make those relevant adjustments.
Yeah. I'm speaking today with Dr. Cham Weng Tang, consultant pediatrician and pediatric rheumatologist from Sunway Medical Center. We're talking about pediatric rheumatology. Specifically, we've been discussing childhood arthritis. Up next, we're going to discuss SLE, systemic lupus erythematosus, or you might know it as SLE, you might know it as lupus. If you've got any questions on either of these issues or really anything to do with your child's health, give us a call. Our phone lines are open. That number is 03-77-109,000. You can also reach us by texting 016-201-9000 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, consultant pediatrician and pediatric rheumatologist, Dr. Cham Weng Tang of Sunway Medical Center. And if you've got any questions about your child's health, if you've been noticing your kid in a little bit of pain recently, or if there have been any changes and you're just worried about it, give us a call. That number, 03-77-109,000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, moving on from childhood arthritis to another autoimmune condition that can also affect children, we have SLE, or systemic lupus erythematosus. What is SLE? How are children affected by it?
Okay, so SLE in general, it's actually another autoimmune disease. It affects about 1 in 3,000 children. And it's a more complicated condition compared to juvenile arthritis, as it can affect the skin, forming the classical butterfly rash like you see in adults. It can cause hair loss, oral ulcers. And the most sinister thing about this condition is it can attack vital organs like the kidney, the eyes, the heart, the brain, and even liver, and can cause life-threatening problems. So some of the skin lesions associated with SLE can be like even things like eczema or allergic rash, and that does not get better with creams or even normal moisturizers. So they may be applying all these lotions for weeks to sometimes even months, and yet they do not get any better. So sometimes what they do is the doctors will start thinking, oh, could this be something different? And they will do some special blood tests and may come back as positive. So especially for SLE, the antibodies that are associated with it would be like things like ANA or anti-nuclear antibody. So this is when you need to think about SLE, when it's positive with all these skin lesions.
I think people who have watched any episodes of House, the TV show, will know the famous saying of it's never lupus. That's what they say, because it seems like it's difficult to diagnose. It's tricky because its symptoms seem to belong to a lot of other things. I mean, when it's lupus, it could also be so many other issues. Is that accurate? If yes, why is that so?
So SLE has another name. It has given many monikers, like a disease with many faces. So the symptoms of SLE can vary actually from one patient to another. So for one patient, it may be just purely affecting the skin, one patient just purely affecting the kidneys, or some patients who are the worst ones can affect any system in the body. So So some actually may just have headaches, long-term headaches and fever that's not getting any better. So from this, it's actually very difficult to fine-tune. But the most important thing is these kind of conditions do not get better with normal medications or normal moisturizers or any normal conventional over-the-counter treatment. Because as you know, this autoimmune disease can affect many things. So it is sometimes even so severe it can affect the brain or kidneys. So because of this variety of presentations, it's actually very hard to diagnose such conditions. And so most of the time when children have prolonged fever or any unusual symptom that doesn't get any better, most pediatricians will refer to a rheumatologist. And because sometimes they have to think about SLE as one of the diagnosis, because if they diagnose SLE early, the chance of it progressing is actually lower compared to if later.
Is there any way to know why SLE might affect a child's skin in one case, a child's kidneys in another? You know, what is it that determines when things move around that way?
No one really exactly know. There's no such like a genetic link that you can say, oh, look at it. If you have this, you're going to likely going to get the kidneys affected or something like that. No one can really know. But we do know that if you have a parent with SLE and your child is at a higher risk of developing SLE. So that means if you have your mother or your father has SLE, and they give birth to a child, and the child has a 20% chance of getting SLE themselves. So this is quite high, it's 1 in 5. So because of this risk, we know that we need to be very vigilant, and we have to monitor these children.
And is it a lifelong illness? Because I think it's the thing that you don't want to hear in the case of, you know, your child, that what they have now as a child is going to be something they have for the rest of their lives.
Unfortunately, SLE, like all autoimmune diseases, we are actually playing with the immune system. We cannot wipe out the immune system. It's not like cancer. You've got cancer cells, we just give some chemotherapy agent and we'll just kill off the cancer cells. And we hope it clears off completely. But in SLE, you cannot clear off the immune system. You need the immune system to be there. We can't live in a bubble all our lives. So we actually have to actually give medications to suppress the immune system to a certain degree and at the same time able to let the child function normally. So most of the time, okay, I would say about 50% of them actually have some form of remission. That means they are well, they go back to school and everything. Some, about 10% to 20%, may actually have no disease at all. That means the disease just goes off completely. But there are a few, like 30 to 40%, which can have the disease lifelong till old age and uncontrolled.
While we're talking about skin issues, we have LTY on the line. Good afternoon, LTY. You have a question about eczema.
And good afternoon, doctor.
Good afternoon.
How are you both?
I'm fine. Okay. I'm fine.
Since just now I heard you mention about eczema, all right? Mm-hmm. May I ask about eczema?
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Yes, because my grandson, who is 10 years old, he has been suffering for many years, really. This is also an autoimmune disease. My question is this, doctor. What happened during anaphylactic attack? What actually happened to a body and why it is dangerous? I understand that some of the symptoms may be swelling of the skin, blood dilation and all this, but how do we take care when such an occasion arises? Can you tell the listeners a bit more about this eczema? Thank you very much.
Thanks, LTY.
Thank you.
So there are actually two parts of the question. One is eczema and one is anaphylaxis. So eczema in general is due to allergies. There are some allergens that this child, your grandson, is actually allergic to. So the most important thing is to prevent the allergens from coming around the child. So there are actually things like skin tests whereby they actually put certain allergens on the skin, patch tests, and find out whether the child is allergic to any of these allergens. And if there are, we can actually prevent this child from actually touching these allergens and prevent the eczema from getting worse. So for the other part about anaphylaxis is a severe form of allergy whereby the body goes into a great shutdown. Mr. LTY mentioned, your blood vessels dilate and the blood pressure can drop dramatically. So how to prevent anaphylaxis is to find out what you're really allergic and what is the cause of the anaphylaxis. One very common allergen that we can have is peanut allergy. So a lot of people who are actually peanut allergy they actually bring around an EpiPen. An EpiPen is actually a pen filled with adrenaline. So whenever the child has an attack, for instance, a difficulty in breathing, they get swelling in the eyes and face, it's life-threatening. They have to inject the EpiPen immediately. And with that, it should save the child's life. So anaphylaxis is just a severe form of allergies whereby not only you get skin manifestations, your internally, your blood vessels, everything also get dilated and can be actually life-threatening.
We asked about genetic links with SLE earlier, or rather you mentioned it. I know we're deviating slightly, but since we were talking about allergies, LTY brought that up. Are allergies also genetic in some way? I mean, if I am severely allergic to honey, for instance, to pollen and such, would I pass that on?
Allergies are quite specific, but it is known that if you are yourself allergic to something, I mean, you have allergies, either whether it could be just rhinitis, it means you've got sinus problems.
Diagnosed allergies, right? Not just self-proclaimed allergies.
Correct, you're right. So you need to be diagnosed by a doctor that you have got like things like asthma. Asthma is also a form of allergy. So if you have diagnosed with allergies, your child will be at a higher risk of developing allergies too. But whether you will be having the same allergies, that means your child having the same allergies like you, it's not the case. Most of the time, they develop their own allergies, but they are a higher risk of developing allergies themselves.
And there's no way that I can try to mitigate that by, you know, feeding them small doses of peanut butter or sneaking honey into cereal, or, you know, is there a way to kind of try and get the system up to speed so that hopefully by the time they're exposed to the world, those odds are better?
It depends on what sort of allergies. If it's a mild allergy, you can mitigate. One very classical example is egg allergy. Some parents actually have children with egg allergies. So when they have egg allergies and they find that the child has egg allergies, they try not to give eggs for the child. But once the child is a little bit older, they can try to introduce small amounts of eggs to the child. And if the child can tolerate it, so that's good. So that means the child can actually take eggs after that. But if they have severe allergies, for instance, like peanut allergies, which is life-threatening, I would suggest not to try giving peanuts to the child if, let's say, it gets an anaphylactic reaction to it.
So maybe this exposure therapy of sorts should also be done in consultation with your doctor.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Don't just start throwing peanuts at your child.
You're right.
If you've got any questions today about children's health, whether it's got to do with rheumatology or in general, we just heard a conversation about eczema and allergies, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, coming back to SLE, how are pregnancies and births monitored and managed, you know, if you have an SLE patient and you're concerned that, you know, there might be that kind of hereditary link happening?
So it is known that if a parent has SLE, the chance of the children have SLE is 20% higher than the normal population. So unfortunately, we have not managed to exactly pinpoint a genetic link. We also know one thing is if they're twins and one of the twins has SLE, the other twin has a 50% chance or 1 in 2 chance of getting SLE themselves. So there is something genetic about it. Okay, so if you have pregnant, if you're pregnant and you are normally, what you do is you'll be screened you won't be screened for SLE, but if you have SLE yourself, you'll be screened for autoantibodies against SLE, such as for SLE, like ANA or anti-RHO. So if the mothers themselves have anti-RHO antibody in their blood test result, they are at risk of having a child with what we call neonatal lupus. So what is neonatal lupus? Neonatal lupus is just a child who develops symptoms of lupus because of the mother having SLE. So once the child is born, the child will need to be looked for any evidence of rash similar to like the mother, and also the heart rate, because it can affect the heart. It can actually slow down the heart rate to really slow, and it can affect the liver, and sometimes it can affect the brain. So what is important is blood tests need to be carried out after the child's born to look at the liver, look at the white cells, the red cells, and also to ensure the liver is not affected. So in these children, if the heart rate is too slow, this newborn child may need to what we call insert a pacemaker. So if there are rashes, they will need creams. And if the liver is affected, we need to make sure that the liver function is appropriate. So If the unborn child starts to show problems with heart rate, some medications can be given to the mother to try to reduce the risk of developing further damage to the heart.
And considering you might be dealing with SLE from such a young age and for potentially the rest of your life, you don't really know, what are the treatment options? How do you make pain management decisions? Because pain management is something that is frightening even, you know, for adults, never mind children.
Yeah. So for the neonatal lupus, the good thing is the antibodies are from the mother. So the mothers are the ones that actually have the antibodies. It crosses the placenta and affects the child. So these children will have the mother's antibody. But the mother's antibodies don't last there forever. After about 6 months, these antibodies will dissipate. And when we recheck the child's body for these antibodies, it would have disappeared. So the good thing is most of them actually get better after 6 months. So even though they have liver problems, they actually do improve with time. If they're rashes, they do improve with time. Okay. For treatment options for SLE, the mainstay, like I said, is to regulate the immune system. So to treat this kind of patients with SLE, they may include steroids and other steroid-sparing medications. And these medications work in a balance to enable the immune system to work as a policeman so that they can actually wipe out the bad policeman. So these medications, these steroids and steroid-sparing medications try to disable all these bad policemen from running havoc and causing problems. So this is a fine balance. And for the more severe cases, we actually sometimes use chemotherapy agents to actually control the disease, especially if the vital organs are affected, like the kidney or the brain, because the conventional treatments are unable to adequately control the disease from worsening. And so early detection is actually quite important.
How do parents deal with the fact that you're using chemotherapy on their children who are not cancer patients? You know, I think it's almost like a worse nightmare.
Yes, correct. So sometimes what we need to do is sit down and have to counsel the parents. We need to tell them, look here, your child is affected by SLE. It's not a mild form of SLE, it's a severe form of SLE. It has caused considerable damage to the kidneys or to the brain or to the lungs or to the heart. So if we do not give a powerful medication like a chemotherapy agent, you may lose your child. And in worst case scenario, if it doesn't kill the child, you can cause problems. Just imagine if it affects the kidney and the kidneys are completely damaged. For a child as young as 10 years old to be on lifelong dialysis, it's actually a nightmare compared to a chemotherapy agent. Because the chemotherapy agent in most of these children, the success rate is actually quite high. It's about 80%. So when we explain this to the parents, they are a little bit more consoled, even though the child has a difficult and terrible disease.
If you've got any questions about SLE or childhood arthritis or anything at all to do with your child's health, give us a call. If you've been concerned recently, we do have a pediatrician in the studio ready to answer your questions. That number to call is 03-77-109000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We spoke about chemotherapy just then, but steroids are also not a popular drug in the popular mindset, I suppose. Yep. People are concerned about it. What is the general perception about the role of steroids in managing autoimmune diseases?
The steroids have actually many negative concerns. If you look at in the internet, it's so well publicized that all the side effects can be really scary. And it's all published in a negative manner. But it has been shown that it is the best medication to work effectively and control the disease from worsening. So it's fast, it's effective. So the most important thing is it must be under control and monitoring by a pediatric rheumatologist. So the good news is whenever we treat SLE, steroids are never alone. There are other steroid-sparing agents such as azathioprine and hydroxychloroquine, which are also introduced quite early in the disease. And this can actually help to better control the disease and at the same time prevent the prolonged use of high-dose steroids. So with this, the side effects of steroids are actually kept to a quite minimum. So there are also newer agents called biologic agents that have been shown to help many children with SLE with very good promise.
What about things like supplements or complementary and alternative treatments? Because, again, I think by and large, even speaking for the layperson, speaking for myself, I think if you can avoid invasive therapies, if you can avoid therapies that seem very frightening, you would. And you would do that even doubly for your child because you want to spare your child whatever you can.
Yeah. So I think everyone out there thinks that supplements or alternative treatment is good because it has the least side effects. And they also, some of them actually claim to be able to treat the immune system, able to regulate the immune system. But unfortunately, these supplements and alternative treatment has no medical evidence that
none?
It works. None at all, unfortunately. So safe to say this. Supplements, they're always marketed as boosting the immune system. So if you have an autoimmune disease, your immune system has gone haywire. And when you boost the immune system, you're boosting also these bad immune cells.
So you're boosting the attackers and the defenders.
Correct.
Right.
So what you get at the end of the day is a worse flare, a worse disease. So we have some children actually who take supplements, and when what happens is their livers actually go haywire. Not only that, the disease gets uncontrolled, and at the end of the day, they actually suffer. So some of them actually have to undergo liver biopsies. So it's actually not a good thing to have. Yeah.
We have a question from Therese. Good afternoon, Therese.
Right. Hi.
Hi. You have a question?
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask regarding SLE and vasculitis.
Yeah,
For an adult, like, because if there's a wound on the leg due to vasculitis and it's not recovering after 3 weeks, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks, so, what is the complications of that?
You mean you have ulcer on your foot or somewhere?
Ulcer.
Okay,
yeah,
and it's not healing after 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
And that ulcer is due to vasculitis.
Yeah.
Okay, and I presume you have a rheumatologist who's looking after you.
It's actually my friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I think there are a few things that you need to be aware of. Number one, vasculitic ulcers are ischemic ulcers. Ischemic means there's lack of oxygen or blood supply to that area, so they tend to be very difficult to heal. So it's very important that you have to keep the wound very clean, okay? And sometimes it can get very infected very easily. So you really have to show it to your rheumatologist. You look here, I've got a wound here now, 3 weeks now. It's a vasculitic ulcer. What can we do? So it's a balance again. So you have to prevent infection. Sometimes your rheumatologist may give you antibiotic creams, treatments to clean the wound. You have to really keep the wound really clean. It's quite similar to like diabetic ulcers because there's lack of blood supply. So you have to be very careful, keep it clean, speak to your rheumatologist, see how big the wound is. They have other medications to expedite wound healing. So it's better to actually see your rheumatologist and get it sorted out. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Thanks a lot.
Hope
Welcome.
That helps. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, we're taking questions from adults as well today.
Yes,
it's a very wide-ranging show.
Yes, it is.
Last call, though, if you've got any questions about your child's health or if you want to ask about SLE or childhood arthritis, that number to call, 03-7710-9000, text 016-201-9000. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. What is considered successful management of childhood rheumatism? I'm curious about this because I think if we have a disease that we know we cannot cure, if we have a disease that you know some of the interventions are going to be quite intense, what would you consider successful? What do you want for the child?
The beautiful part about treating children is they are a joy to treat. Why do I say so? When they're well, they are well. They run around, they say they are well, and that's it. The last person they want to see is a doctor because the doctor will start poking needles in and everything. So what do I classify as successful? So if a child is able to perform the normal daily activities, for instance, if they have arthritis of the wrists or the fingers and that has prevented them from using that hand, and now with treatment, they are better. They can move their hands easier. Then that means that's successful. Okay, so our aim is always to ensure a normal life as possible so that the child can enjoy a child's life. Because children are there to be playful, they are there to play, they are there to learn. If you actually take away their ability to learn, it's one thing that they don't enjoy. So I think the most important thing is we need to actually see the child as a whole. We have questionnaires that we actually develop for children with arthritis to see what the parents think about the child, whether the arthritis is well controlled or not. And if the child is big enough, the child can fill up the form themselves and see whether the arthritis is well controlled. So to me, they will be happy and cheerful. And if their blood tests some more show lack of inflammation in the disease, I would consider that generally a successful management.
Is there any self-management involved for a child with a rheumatic disease?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think children with rheumatic conditions like arthritis, they are always advised to exercise. You want to keep them mobile. You do not want to, you know, most parents, when they have a child with arthritis, oh, keep them at home, don't
lie
injure
down, have a
light.
Soft blanket.
Correct. So I think the most important thing is not to actually coop your child too much. If they are well, they want to be around. Children want to run. They want to explore. Let them. So the most important thing is to encourage them. You need to keep the joints to move. That's why the joints are there in the first place. So you encourage them to do activities like swimming, cycling, because these have low impact. So if they have pain in the knees, if you go swimming, you don't need the knees, but you can swim. So it keeps their joints moving. So for us, we also have family days that we conduct with the Arthritis Foundation of Malaysia. And what we do is we are actually showing the parents that the child can actually partake in those fun activities. They have fun, they have laughter, and found, hey, my child actually could do a lot of these things. But all this while, they have been actually protecting the child too much. So I think this is always a two-way thing. Doctors, the patients themselves and also the parents need to understand that these patients themselves can actually do activities.
The ideal, I suppose, would be for there to be a cure, not just management, but a cure. How close are we to finding that cure for rheumatic disease in childhood?
Okay. It's very difficult because there are many facets that need to be considered when you're treating an autoimmune disease. There's unfortunately no single one cure as the immune system is highly complex. So the good news is we are better in understanding the immune system than before. And we have found that many conditions, including even heart disease like in adults, are due to actually uncontrolled inflammation. And what happened is the scientists are using medications to actually suppress this inflammation to the vessels that are supplying the heart. And it has been shown to delay heart disease in some patients. So for now, we have many more medications to help battle this disease. And with our better understanding of the immune system, we can better control these diseases from escalating out of control.
And finally, to close off, if listeners are interested to learn more about pediatric rheumatology, or if they have a child who has a rheumatic disease and they're looking for support, they're looking for education, what can they do? Where can they go?
So there are many websites or places that can go. For instance, the Arthritis Foundation of Malaysia and the SLE Association of Malaysia regularly conducts talks and awareness programs. If there are parents who suspect their child may have any of these symptoms that I mentioned earlier, well, they can come and see me in Sunway Medical Center. But for parents with SLE and they are worried that the child has a risk of developing SLE, they also can be on the lookout to look at the websites by the SLE Association of Malaysia. If they are diagnosed with SLE, what they can do is we at Sunway, we have educational books, we got programs, and we can actually counsel teachers, parents too, and we do complete counseling together with parents so that they know whatever is done is for the best interest of their child.
Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Cham.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Dr. Cham Wing Tang, consultant pediatrician and pediatric rheumatologist from Sunway Medical Center. We've been discussing pediatric rheumatology, specifically childhood arthritis and SLE. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.